Wow. Welcome to Lions Collective. This is definitely it's been a very uneventful, no news, you know, very psych. Frank Ragnow's back. He's a Detroit Lion. All right, cut the crap. All right, the multiple time Pro Bowler has returned. We'll break that down today. We'll talk Lions Packers Thanksgiving matchup. You guys, I mean, this was like around afternoon. Now the fellas are doing a show. You guys have been busy ever since. I mean, you guys have been busy all day, but the news broke. Now we're doing a show. What's going through your guys' minds here?
Nothing. Nothing is going through my mind anymore. I actually just published another story while the intro music was rolling there. Got a little Marcus Davenport back in the mix this week. But it all pales in comparison to... Is it more shocking that he came back or that he retired? Because I feel like it's more shocking that he's back.
Me, I agree.
100%.
I agree. Just speaking with his closest friends on the team, I got the sense that he was so content in retirement, he wasn't even pondering this possibility. I mean, I go back to a conversation that I had with Taylor Decker, I don't know, maybe a month and a half ago, where I was like, you know, have you been checking in with Frank at all? Just, you know, friend to friend. And Decker emphasized how much he was loving being away from the game. Frank, that is. And I think when they talked, Frank was off to the dog park to walk his dogs and was telling Decker how great his body felt, not having to be put through the ringer every week. And then Decker was like, I don't even know if he's watching the games, to be quite honest. Like, he just painted the picture of a player who was blissfully detached. And then, you know, I talked with Graham Glasgow maybe a few weeks after that, so say about a month ago now, and just kind of getting his thoughts on his relationship with Frank, and if he was maybe going to reach out to him ahead of that Buccaneers game with that kind of aggressive Todd Bowles defense that Frank was so adept at countering as a center. And as Frank said to me, he's probably in like Canada fishing. Yeah, you know, he's like, we'll talk every now and then, but he's doing his own thing. And then Graham went on to say, I really don't even know how much he's paying attention to what's happening here. And I told him what Deck had told me, that like, yeah, it sounds like he's not even watching the games. And Dan Skipper at the locker next door, another close friend of Frank, was like, yeah, he's not. He's living his best life. All to say, stunned, absolutely stunned today by this news. And maybe those guys were just trying to throw us off the scent and they knew more than they were letting on. But those felt like pretty sincere conversations. But the whole time, Frank was apparently keeping tabs. And it does. Colton, you can jump in and then I'll finish up.
Well, before I start, I want to ask you guys, where were you guys when this news broke? Because I have my own story, but I want to get you guys real quick. Where were you guys?
Bro, I was trying to take my 2-year-old son to the doctor, which was already a huge lift. And he was already recoiling at the very idea of going into the doctor's office. And then Frank Ragnow decides to unretire.
Yeah.
You just left him there. You're on your own, bud.
Give him whatever shots he needs.
Just,
you know, I was fortunately braced. I was sitting at my desk, kind of setting up the file for pending returns. I think we were expecting, you know, transactions at 4. I don't know exactly what time this happened, but it feels like maybe 15 to 30 minutes before 4 o'clock. So I was already kind of in work brain, but still, I mean, not for that. It upends a day. Like, I feel like I have to do more once we get done with this. And yeah, really, yeah. I didn't do the stuff that I wanted to do anyway today. So great.
Jeff?
Yeah, you're better than me, Justin. I'm at the gym. I have a dumbbell in my hand. I get a text from Booner. He goes, man's Frank Ragnow's back. I dropped the dumbbell. I ran out of the gym. Probably everyone in that gym thought I had diarrhea. I mean, I ran out of the gym mid-workout. And I raced home to make a video. And I've had moments like that, but for whatever reason, well, not for whatever reason, this one felt different. All right. So if there's any cops listening, I went the speed limit. I didn't go fast. I went the speed limit and I got home and made content. It was crazy.
Did you even rack your weight? You just dropped it on the floor and ran out?
No gym etiquette, man.
Yeah.
He dropped it. He dropped it right on his toe in Frank's honor. Ah.
Yeah.
Somebody sounded like an alarm understand. At Planet Fitness.
I was out of there.
So I was about to sit in my barber's chair. I was in Southfield where I usually get my cuts. I had finished basically all my responsibilities for the day. I was feeling good. Filed like a Thanksgiving story that ran this morning. And I'm like, cool, I'm done until tomorrow. So I finally like was able to get a haircut. I'm literally about to sit in the chair and I see the tweet and I'm like, is that a photo of Frank? I was like, that's a weird way to announce that he's like showing up for the Thanksgiving game. That's going to get people to think he's coming back.
Halftime show.
And then like a couple seconds later, it starts to sink in. It's like, oh no, he's actually coming back. Okay. Got it. Cool. Let me go scramble. So I basically typed up a story from the barber chair and I'm like, yep, do what you gotta do. But I'm going to be like looking around like this, typing. It's jarring. I mean, kind of like Birchie said, like you talk to people about Frank and every story you hear is, oh, he's happy. He's living his best life. I checked in with, you know, people in this camp, I think earlier this month after the Vikings game. So I'm like, that's a game where they probably could have used Frank. Yeah. And people were talking about it, but I was kind of just like, hey, he's probably dropped, you know, 30 something pounds, right? Like it was, he's not coming back. And, you know, kind of the response I got is he's very happy with his free time. Kind of along the same lines as what Birchie said, like it's kind of hard for him to watch football. He's not really, you know, in it right now. He's trying to decompress, get away, I guess, a little bit. But so that was kind of where my mind was at. Obviously, I think Campbell was asked about on, was it 97.1, I believe?
It was.
Like that ship has sailed. If the ship sailed, it pulled up right on the Detroit River because Frank Ragnow's back, man. And that is absolutely massive news for this team. We all know the issues with the offensive line. And Frank, in a lot of ways, was the glue to that. And you almost got tired of talking about the offensive line because you're like, look, man, he's not coming back. Like, it is what it is. You got to move forward. Like, there's no living in the past. You have to kind of proceed. And then this news drops, and you're just like, all right, cool. How quickly can you get back on the field? Can you play tomorrow? Like, no. But that's kind of the idea. And it's like, I do think this significantly raises the ceiling of this offense, even the floor. It's going to be I'm curious how early he can get back into game shape, but man, that's massive news. And you know, shout out to him dropping it, you know, while I'm in the barber seat. That was funny.
You know, he needs zero time to be mentally ready. That dude could process the game plan in about, you know, two and a half hours, get it crunched, get ready to go out there. But you know, there is a football shape element to it, you know, tackling bucks and dragging the carcasses back to your pickup truck, a little bit different than, you know, trying to block Kenny Clark and Quinnen Williams next week. So it sounds like as early as next week is maybe some of the early reports. I'm sure we're going to get a chance to talk to Frank and get his perspective on where his body's at. But, you know, this is not a 36-year-old dude. It's still a 29-year-old dude, and he's probably in pretty good shape. And I don't know if they'll push it. I think it really depends on what the long-term ramifications here of this Graham Glasgow injury that's going to keep him out of the lineup tomorrow. But I would imagine you come back this late in the season, you know, there's a little bit of urgency, and I don't think he's going to miss more than this one and the next one before he's back on the field.
Yeah, so I, you know, it's funny because Dan did make it seem like there was a 0.0% chance that Frank would come back when he made that comment. And, you know, then I just kind of asked around today after the news broke that he was returning. And the picture that was painted to me from, you know, people inside the building is that the Lions did keep in contact with Frank from the moment that he retired through today. And there was regularly routine conversations between the two sides where they were exploring this possibility that he actually might come back and they might be able to work it out. And, you know, all of that communication was described as healthy. And, you know, there wasn't any pressure or demands being exerted or made by either side. They were just kind of talking through it. And this was a now or never situation, at least in the context of this season today, because today for the Lions was the deadline by which they could reinstate a player who was on the retired or reserve list. This has to happen before the day of your week 13 game. So the Lions and Frank Ragnow had to come to this agreement today, or they couldn't come to one this season. And it sounds like there were a series of calls today between Ragnow's camp and the Lions brass, and those heated up this afternoon, and his decision and their agreement was finalized just a few hours before the deadline. So there has been communication ever since Ragnow stepped away. And I think this is just my speculation now. I think for Frank, even if he wasn't watching the games every Sunday, he was aware of how the team was performing. And I think for him, the idea that his teammates, especially on the offensive line, Taylor, Graham, Panay, were struggling without him was maybe a little bit too much for him to bear. And I also think the fact that he walked away with 2 years left on his contract and the Lions so close to the Super Bowl each of the last two seasons compelled him to come back. I go back to something he said, I believe, when he first signed his extension, which was that I'm not someone to sign a contract and not fulfill it. Like, I'm not someone to commit to doing a job and not getting it done. That was why I was most surprised when he initially retired. And I think some of those thoughts eventually compelled him to return.
It's so funny how dumb I feel like he's made us look, right? Like, even before the retirement, like, talking to him, like, I had no inclination that was coming. And I know, like, speculation swirled based on some maybe misconstrued comments, but, really, really caught me off guard when that happened this offseason. And I was in the 0.0% camp of him coming back. I just didn't believe it. And, you know, I think he probably just heard all of Colton's EPA numbers.
I got some more. I got some more.
Really, I know you do, and I'm excited for them. He heard them. He heard the time in the pocket for Jared Goff had dropped by 0.1 second, and he's like, "Man, game of inches, nah, game of fractions of seconds. I got to get back to my guy." And so, a stunner, a pleasant stunner, obviously. And you know, if he is 85% of the player that walked out the door with the, you know, needing a little time to knock the rust off, the Super Bowl contention status of the Lions takes a nice little positive bump today.
I think your 0.0 number makes a lot of sense, because we always said, even when he was still around, when Frank retires, he's not coming back. He's going to be on a boat somewhere in Minnesota, and we're never going to see him.
Right.
That's how a lot of us thought, based on like some of his comments in the past and just how he carries himself. And for a while, it looked like that would be the case. You know, he's still posted on Instagram, like the hunting pics that you would see pop up. And I'm just like, oh, good for him, man. He's enjoying himself. But clearly something shifted, and I don't know if it was, you know, hey, I've been watching the team and, you know, I feel like I need to come back right now. He waited up until the deadline. I think that today was the deadline, right, to decide if he was coming back or not, I believe. So right up at the buzzer to make this decision, but it's huge news. And Justin, I do have some EPA metrics for you.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Right before the show. And here's, obviously, we know they've struggled without him this year. I don't think I need to repeat some of those numbers, but I did look up between 2022 and 2024 games where he was on the field versus off the field, or even plays that he was on the field versus off the field. So this is from 22 to 24. When he was on the field, the Lions ranked second in EPA per play. Without him, that dropped to 16th. In terms of EPA per play when blitzed, the Lions were third. Without him, they were 19th against the blitz. In terms of sack rate, with him on the field, they were third during that span. Without him, they were 25th.
Jeez.
In offensive success rate, they were third in the NFL. Without him, they were 24th.
Ooh.
In offensive rushing success rate, they were 7th in the league. Without him, they were 30th. And last one, pressure rate during that span, 22 to 24, they were 10th in the NFL. Without him, they were 29th. So this dude, even you can say what you want about this year's team, but even when he was playing at a high level, this offense struggled without him when he was on the field. And we saw it in those games where he was missing or banged up. And it's why I thought he was one of the most important players on the team when he was around. And centers don't really get a lot of glory, don't get a lot of love, but the things that he was able to do in terms of a pass protection standpoint, from the things he can do in the run game, one of the most athletic centers in the game, his mind, his ability to spot out blitzers and help communicate with the rest of the offensive line and help Jared in protections, like all that stuff was so important. And you lose that. And I know they tried to plan for it. You know, you bring in Tate and it's like, maybe he can play center in 2026, or you got Graham and he's still around and he's played the position before, but none of those guys are Frank Ragnow. And so when you lose a piece like that, you can only do so much, especially when they're kind of letting him make his decision that offseason. So to have him back, and even as Justin mentioned, even if it's 85%, that's better than what you have now. And I really think it kind of raises the floor and ceiling of this offense and what they can do.
Do we think that Frank was just playing a little 4D chess, took a little note, you know, gave that money back from not playing two-thirds or three-quarters of a season, and then that allowed the Lions to re-sign J-Mo? Big move by Frank, obviously. But I think the real interesting discussion here, and, you know, it's tough to process today, certainly without speaking to him and gaining insight into his mindset, but he's under contract for next year as well. And he's 29. I think he'll be 30 at the start of next season. Clearly still got a ton in the tank if, you know, he's interested in pursuing this. So is this just a quick visit, or, you know, is this something potentially that could bridge a gap that they really needed to, you know, address in the offseason coming up?
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, so to clarify something I said just a few minutes ago, it was actually, let's see, it was in 2000, it was last year. It was last year when Frank said that the Lions signed me to this extension a few years ago, and I want to be fulfilling that. I don't want to be the guy who gets paid and isn't doing that stuff. I want to be out there finding a way to win. And it was that quote that kept rattling around in my head as people began wondering if he might retire. And I was just like, there's no way, because this is a guy who stands by his word, and he is going to fulfill this deal, even if it costs him a toe or two. And then something else that resonates, especially today, are comments that Sewell and Decker both made about Frank. And this was after the 2023 season, when some of these retirement murmurs, at least externally, first popped up. Sewell said, he'll always be out there if we're out there. And Decker said it maybe even more poignantly. He said, I feel like a little bit of him is like paranoia to not be out there with us, because we've been through so much together. So if he can be out there, we know he's going to be out there. And I just think Frank had reached a point, apparently by the end of last season, entering this one, where he felt like, as he said himself, he could not physically be out there anymore. But obviously after this recuperation period, he feels like he can. And it's that paranoia that, again, without speaking to him, I do think played a part in his decision to return. His need, his urge to be there with his guys, especially in the midst of a season where they've been struggling, obviously, to maintain their standard.
Yeah, well, I sat down with him one-on-one before a charity event, his charity event, ahead of the 24 season, and we kind of laughed about the retirement speculation, and he was borderline pissed off about it. And it takes a lot to piss off Minnesota nice Frank Ragnow. And you know, we kind of talked about, like, no, what does it really look like? And in that conversation, and I would say I have a good relationship with Frank Ragnow. I don't think he was BSing. Like, he kind of said, like, yeah, I feel like I've got a few years left, you know, in this game. And, you know, you see the season he had in 2025. I thought it was much improved physically and health-wise, right? Like, I think he found a rhythm and a flow with the training staff, with Mike Clark and I'm forgetting the name, Brett Fisher, you know, just the path they put him on to get him ready every day. He talks so positively about how much better he felt through the course of the season. And I made some kind of quip to him, you know, at the end of last season about, you know, are we going to do this retirement dance again? And, you know, it's kind of like an eye roll or a sigh or whatever. Like, it never entered my mind that he would walk away, you know, especially for a guy that always said, like, there's a guilt, right? When you don't play, when you're injured and you don't play, and being there for your teammates. We hear Terry LeDecker say it all the time, like this overwhelming guilt when you can't be out there for your teammates. And it struck me as something that Frank would not do, walk away when there was still something in the tank. And so I don't know how much that kind of weighed on him on top of, you know, just maybe feeling physically right. But, you know, I think you maybe were onto something when you said, you know, just having these phone calls and these conversations with Decker and Glasgow and whoever else he might've been talking to, you know, may have, you know, ignited that fire once again.
Yeah, I was walking out of the locker room yesterday, and it was a pretty sparsely attended locker room session. Both media and players, there really weren't a whole lot of guys to talk to. And on my way out the door, and this is more speculation, I just walked past Taylor and Graham, who were having what looked like a pretty discreet private conversation away from everyone else in the locker room, away from both of their locker room stalls, kind of towards the entrance and exit that we use as media members. And when I walked by, they were just kind of speaking, not in hushed tones, but in quiet tones. And when Frank and the news about him dropped today, I just thought back to that conversation, that moment yesterday, and was like, were they talking like, hey, did Frank call you? Because Frank called me. Because Frank told me he might be coming back. But no, to echo some of Colton's stats, I think the difference in their rushing ability with Frank versus without Frank, it stands to make the biggest difference for this offense. Because once they can rush the ball with more regularity, if they can, it kind of solves some of the pass protection issues on its own, especially the ability to get into the play action pass. And I'll go back to another conversation that I had with Graham this year, and where I was just asking him about some of their struggles to run the ball. And I feel like, guys, tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we wound up talking so much the past couple of years about Frank's mental edge before the snap, you know, their secret weapon, their code cracker, that it wasn't a secret anymore. It was almost as appreciated or more appreciated than everything he did after the snap, which was a lot. Like, he was still playing at an elite level. And so I was asking Graham about, you know, some of their issues to run the ball. And he mentioned how teams have loaded the box in his eyes more than ever against them this year. And he was like, the only way to find lanes and gain yards when they have eight or nine guys in the box is you got to have one or two guys on your line, in his words, beat somebody's ass on the other side. Otherwise, you're looking at minimal gains. And on the flip side, if you have guys on your side getting their ass beat, that's when you get negative plays in TFLs. And that's where the Lions thrived last year. They had three of the 10 best run-blocking offensive linemen, regardless of position, in the NFL per Pro Football Focus: Sewell, Ragnow, and Zeitler. Those guys could, like, win their first block consistently and then usually get into the second level and take on another block or take out a second player. This year, so far, they have one of the top 40 run-blocking offensive linemen in the NFL per Pro Football Focus. That is Penei Sewell. And they just haven't found enough lanes consistently to run the ball because of it. So with Frank back, that's where I think he could provide the biggest boost.
Do you think
Decker... Will, you have... I'm going to really quickly. Will has romanticized a moment. What they were talking about in the corner was that fresh shipment of Magnolia Bakery banana pudding that Graham was
eating. Yeah.
And he was just keeping it away from the rest of the guys in the room. There was nothing about Ragnar there. It was about banana pudding, bro.
I was going to ask if you thought Decker and Graham pulled up to Frank's house with a boombox playing some love ballads, trying to get him back. That'd be something.
You know, it's funny because they're coming off a game, and I get it, like, opponent considerations, whatever, but, like, Gibbs went ham against the Giants, right? And three long runs, and all three of those long runs were Graham Glasgow had great blocks on all of them. Like, the interior line created those initial opportunities that sprung the back to the second level. Gibbs's best game of his career. And you know, you don't get too high or too low on one game, but I still think pass pro is going to be the bigger potential impact. I hear that blitz number and that sack number and the offensive efficiency numbers that Colton throws out there. I'm thinking, yeah, this is where Ragnow provides the most value, is that diagnostic traits that he has pre-snap to get those guys in the right position to pick up anything and everything thrown at them, because he's seen it all. He's in there early, processes it so well. And, you know, I think a factor maybe we're not talking about is the value he's going to have for Ratledge and the returning Miles Frazier here. Just helping them see the game through his eyes in the meeting room is going to think invaluable to their early career development in pass pro in particular.
I also think this helps Demo kind of as a runner in the interior. I feel like, you know, Gibbs can always spring the big one, but if you're going to try to go for the singles, which are those, you know, 5-6 yard runs that Montgomery was getting last year behind Frank, that hasn't really been here as much this year. And I know they haven't really gotten him as much, but I think that's where Frank's value can really be shown, is once he's in there and he's playing at a decent level, or at least I think where they hope he can get to is a high level. But once he's in there and he kind of reasserts himself, that's going to help Demo and make him more efficient, I think, as a running back in the backfield.
Yeah,
maybe Demo was there with the boombox too.
It made me think of your tweet, Colton, the other day when you pointed out only 6.8% of the Lions' pass attempts this season have traveled 20 or more yards, which is 32nd in the NFL. And you put on the same tweet, fourth lowest rate in a single season over the last decade.
Yeah.
So the questions about taking deep shots are, you know, because Jared Goff's time to pass is significantly down this year. You'd like to think not only with the run game and with pass protection, it'll allow this offense, at least Jared Goff, a little more time in the pocket for these long developing routes. So the Jameson Williams stuff felt like last year with Frank, at every couple games, J-Mo was catching a 40-yard reception. Hopefully this year when he comes back, you'll start to see more of that kind of come into play here. When I read your tweet, by the way, fourth lowest, and you have people tweeting, at least asking, like, is this like franchise history or is this like, like, no, this is NFL, any team. So it'll be a significant add there. I saw this comment too, Mandy. Says, I feel like this explains Dan's demeanor yesterday at the press conference. Got 500 milligrams of caffeine, but 300 pounds of Frank Ragnow coming back.
Dude, he was on one.
Yeah. I mean, it may make sense. Nagy says here, who reached out first, Frank or the Lions?
It's a fair question.
Yeah, that's it. That is a good
question. Yeah, I don't have the answer.
That's a million-dollar question, to be honest.
It seems like the dialogue was at least kept open, but knowing the deadline was today, they probably were like, hey, what are we doing here, buddy?
Stop playing games, man.
Yeah. Back. No, it's going to be such a great conversation when we get a chance to talk to him, and hopefully it's, you know, as early as the weekend, right? I think our next access with locker room is Sunday. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's at the game. Who knows? You know, a lot of those questions about just kind of the logistics of all of it, his mindset, his future beyond this year, and maybe he hasn't decided on that, but like, we're going to get so many answers when we actually have the chance to talk to Ragnow, because it's not a guy that shies away from questions. We'll get some pretty direct and honest answers. I think it's going to be a really, maybe one of the most fascinating locker room conversations we have all year.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. It's a dangerous combination. I mean, you have Jahmyr Gibbs playing unbelievable football. He's one of the favorites right now to win offensive player there. He's coming off 250 roughly yards from scrimmage against the Giants, one of the most electric playmakers right now in the NFL. And now you have that combination, like you kind of highlighted there, Will, with Frank Ragnow coming back. The DeMont stuff, I think, will settle itself, like you mentioned, Colton, but Jahmyr Gibbs right now, he was just making this off. I mean, their offensive line, I guess they are a better run blocking unit than pass protecting, but it's not the same, obviously, without Frank Ragnow. But it seems like Jahmyr Gibbs is the type of player that just covers holes. Even if you can't run block as good as you used to do, he is such a great player that it kind of masks some of that. And now Graham Glasgow is out tomorrow officially. So assuming Tristan Cologne gets that center start, it's going to look a lot differently. But when you have a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs, it does help, at least in the run game. When you have a guy like that, any touch could take it, basically hit his head off the goalpost. I mean, that's the type of guy he's been this year for the Lions. It's been unreal. But what have you guys made of Jahmyr Gibbs this year and how important he's been for this Lions team and this Lions offense?
Yeah.
He was so good last year, and he's getting better this year. And I, you know, was really surprised to see that not just was this his best game, but three of his most four productive games in the NFL have come in the last five Lions games. Like, he's just on a heater. But we also know, like, he's not matchup proof. You know, within that five game stretch, the Vikings shut him down in week one, the Packers shut him down. And so, you know, this is, I think, a huge game for him to, because right now, as he goes, the Lions offense goes. Like, it's not as the ground game the Lions offense goes. It's as Jahmyr Gibbs goes, the Lions offense goes. It's just the reality of things at the moment. He's electric. I've spent kind of all week thinking about, like, NFL history comps, because we're starting to look at a guy that's, you know, got the potential to be historically good. And I know there's been some Barry Sanders buzz this week, and I mean, clearly these kids have not seen Barry Sanders, I think, just such different players. But I look at Gibbs and I see prime Jamal Charles. I see prime Chris Johnson. You know, these guys that had that electric breakaway speed that could do damage at any point. Like, people forget Chris Johnson had 2,500 yards from scrimmage in a season once. Like, just absolutely electric. And you don't get to see performances like we saw last week very often. I mean, you just have to sit back and process it kind of after you're able to kind of calm down from the writing element of it and just like, damn, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever see anything like that again or if I've seen anything quite like that before. Like, that was Calvin Johnson's 300-yard game. It was kind of comparable to that. Like, he's such a special talent, and, you know, he's emerged and almost maybe surpassed St. Brown as the Lions' most dangerous, important offensive player.
Yeah, I feel like the old adage is, you know, don't get a running back in here before you have your offensive line built. And I thought the timing of them going and getting a player like Gibbs and upgrading from DeAndre Swift, and, you know, you could say the same about Demo and Jamal, but to bring in a guy like that not only elevates your offense, but also elevates your floor. And so you get to a point where even if your offensive line does take a slight step back, which it has this year without Frank and Kevin Zeitler, people forget, like, this dude was drafted 12th overall for a reason, man. Like, he not only are those guys elevating him when you had a Frank Ragnow in here, but he's taking that to the next level. And even without that special group, that special elite offensive line, he can still take it to the house anytime he touches the ball. He's one of the most explosive players in the league. They called him an offensive weapon when they drafted him. And you're seeing that play out, like, week in and week out, basically. And I know there are some games where it's a little bit down, but, you know, even against the Eagles, like, he's still finding ways to contribute in the pass game and doing things and carrying his weight around on the field. So, like, yeah, I mean, he's really ascending into this top tier of running backs in the NFL. If you're starting a franchise, there aren't many guys who are taking over him in terms of skill players right now in the league. Like, he is that dude. And Dan Campbell was obviously working with Sean Payton, and Sean Payton is a guy that leans on his star talent when he needs a go-to play. And, like, I think you're seeing Dan do the same thing with Jameer. And that game was so fun to watch because every time they needed a play, they gave it to the running back. You don't really see that often in the NFL these days. It's always, we got to get something in the pass game, we got to get the pass game going. They were patient. And they said, all right, we're going to give it to Gibbs. You know, let's get him 26 touches in this game and just hope that he just keeps carrying us. And he did from start to finish in that game. So obviously you get to overtime and takes it one touch and goes 69 yards and you have a nice day there. So I don't know if people got that. But that's what you get with Gibbs, right? And that's why you bring him in here. That's why you are probably going to pay him when that time comes. You keep him around here as long as possible because – his game's going to age well, I think. I love what they did when he first got here, when he was a rookie, kind of worked him in slowly. Fantasy community did not love that. They were on Dan's ass. but they're doing that for a reason. They wanted to work him in slowly and kind of keep his body fresh. And I think that's going to prolong his career, at least you get to the back end. And I think his game has a chance to age pretty gracefully here, barring, you know, some crazy injury. But I really love what they've done with him. And now it's to a point where we need you. Like, we're going to give you the ball 20, 25 touches a game, and you got to go help us win, man. That's kind of where they're at with him, and it's been cool to see him take this step.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go a step further, Colton. He's ascending into the top tier of offensive playmakers in the NFL. Any conversation that includes Christian McCaffrey and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and Jonathan Taylor has to include Jahmyr Gibbs. I think if you canvassed league GMs and asked them to choose one offensive skill player aside from quarterback to begin a franchise or an offense with, a large number of them would choose Jahmyr Gibbs because he really is proving true what Brad Holmes said about him when he drafted him and most of the NFL world mocked him 2 years ago, which is that we consider him, and I want to make sure I get this right, an elite multi-phase explosive positionless weapon, and they are utilizing him like that more than ever before. And you know, you watch him play last week and you try and find the right words to describe it, and sometimes those words best come from his teammates, guys who have been in the NFL and around football and playmakers of a similar stature for a long time. And so that was kind of my goal entering the locker room, was to figure out how these guys could explain what he's doing. And I heard a term, he's like an alien. I heard the term he is a cheat code. You know, you heard Rocky Sin, who has been in the NFL for 7 years, call him one of one in this league. And I think that's a pretty fair way to describe Jahmyr Gibbs at this point. And J-Raj, I know you kind of resist the Barry comparison, and I never really got to see Barry play myself, but we did have a chance to speak with Lomas Brown yesterday. And by the way, shout out Lomas Brown, who was announced as a semifinalist for the Naismith Hall of Fame. Well-deserved. Couldn't happen to a better person, and obviously to a great player. He could run for mayor in Detroit and win in a goddamn landslide. but when we were talking with Lomas yesterday, at the very end, I just wanted to get his thoughts on Jahmyr Gibbs, and I asked him if he ever watches Gibbs and sees shades of Barry, and he said the one thing that they do similarly is they set up blocks the same, and it takes a really cerebral, instinctive player to do that, and I thought that was notable coming from Lomas Brown. He then went on to say that Jahmyr Gibbs' speed stands alone. He's like, I have not seen breakaway speed like that before, which says a lot when you talk about a offensive lineman who spent most of his career blocking for Barry Sanders. But to that point, Gibbs now leads the NFL in 20-plus yard runs this season and 40-plus yard runs this season, and to no surprise, in yards per carry at 6.1. And Barry Sanders' single-season best yards per carry was 6.1. You know, we're watching a Hall of Fame caliber talent right now in Jahmyr Gibbs.
They're just stylistically different. I think that's my main point, right? Like,
oh, for sure, for sure.
Slash and go. Like, Barry did not have that speed. Barry was the best phone booth running back of all time. Like, that's what it boils down to. Like, he can make six guys miss in a 3-yard by 3-yard square. And, you know, Gibbs just turns on the burners, and they're both incredibly special talents. Like, the Lions are fortunate to have them. Gibbs could end up being in that all-time great category. They're just the thing to me is, like, I just don't see the stylistic comps.
I think it's more like the essence of, like, having an elite running back and watching Aura, him play baby. Every week. Yeah, Aura.
Could you imagine Barry doing the goalpost dance that Gibbs did a couple years ago? I don't think so.
Yeah, according to my dad, he hasn't passed Billy Sims yet. So I have to
got work to do.
Yeah, you know, that's just the era he's from. Dad got to pass Billy Sims, so he told me.
That's right. One thing at a time.
Yeah. All right, I got to tell you guys about our friends over at Sleeper, and then we'll get into more Lions, Packers, and different storylines. We'll see you in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to...
Oh, all right. Well, you heard it from our friends over at Sleeper. Let me tell you about them. All right. You use the code HMA. You get a $100 deposit up to $100. And they also have Sleeper Picks, by the way, which you should go use for tomorrow's Lions-Packers Thanksgiving game. It's very simple. I already have my picks in. I think I have more Christian Watson, more Jahmyr Gibbs, like we just discussed, more Jared Goff passing yards, and you should go and do the same. Obviously, gamble responsibly, but all you got to do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players, pregame, live, or across different sports. You pick more or less. Like I said, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. You share with your friends and get rewarded together. Now, as always, appreciate our friends over at Sleeper. Now let's get back to the show. Let me get this right. All right, we are back, and we have 20 more minutes left of the show, and I want to spend more time talking different things. We obviously want to get to the defense, which on Sunday, you know, it is what it is, okay? Mm-hmm. They gave up a ton of plays to Jameis Winston. I think he was number one last week in time to pass, which, you know, it's fine. 3.36 seconds time to pass. Uncharacteristic from this defense in general. A lot of big plays. You know, Jameis felt like he had all day back there. Even though they had pressure, it just felt like they couldn't get him down. Tomorrow, they have Jordan Love. They have a better quarterback. It's a rematch from week one in which, you know, the Packers kind of took care of the Lions here. But is it now Marcus Davenport activated? Josh Pascal, not as good news coming from that side. But what do you guys kind of expect from a bounce back performance on a short week from this defense? No Kirby Joseph as well. So another week without Kirby. But what's kind of your confidence level in a rebound and in this matchup with this Packers offense, with not big time receivers, but still a couple guys that can get you?
Still think that Giants performance was fluky. You know, you look at the tape, and there just was a lot of uncharacteristic, unusual things going on. Obviously just incorporating DJ Reed back, had some moving pieces, some zone breakdowns, some miscommunications, just things we haven't seen all year. And I know that some of the consistent themes popped up, that the third and longs continue to be an issue, the big plays continue to be an issue, but I still saw a really good run defense in that game. I still saw a quarterback that only completed 50% of his throws, that was forced into a turnover. I think the pressure wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as maybe some of us thought watching the game live. And I think it's less about Hutchinson and more about getting help, right? Like he's just not getting a lot of help. And I think Aleem really came on strong at the end of that game. And obviously he created that sack for Hutchinson late, but they still need more pressure off the edge. And I understand stylistically how they play opposite Hutchinson. But Davenport's able to do that with a little bit more effectiveness, not just bull rushing the pocket, but maybe, getting free of his block late and having a little bit more ability to affect the quarterback. I think that could be a really, really big addition that maybe takes this defense, tightens it up a little bit more from the strength that it's been all season.
Yeah, I think the Giants really kind of threw the kitchen sink at the Lions, kind of emptied the playbook there with Mike Kafka. I feel like he was kind of coaching to keep that job a little bit.
Literally, yes.
And auditioning for maybe a new one.
Auditioning for a new one, for sure. Yeah, man. Like I think he's going to have some opportunities, but that's what it felt like. Obviously when you have all these trick plays, you're like, all right, yeah, here comes the whole playbook. I do think things kind of settled down after that first quarter, but it was jarring seeing like some of these passes get completed. Some of these guys that had 30 yards in front of them when they caught the ball, that's not kind of what we're used to seeing from this defense. It's usually been pretty disciplined under Kelvin Shepard. And I guarantee you, we didn't talk to him this week. I guarantee you he was pissed at that performance, and he's going to try to have these guys ready to go this week, I should say. But that was a pretty bad performance. I think I'll give credit to John Neo here. I think it was it last week that Shep called them the firefighters? Yeah. I think Neo in his column called them the arsonist after that Giants game, which I think is hilarious. That's not characteristic of this defense. I think they'll be better. Obviously DJ Reed was on a bit of a snap count. I think he said they wanted him at like 20 to 30 plays, no more than that. And this week they should be getting some guys back. We might see Marcus Davenport for the first time since what, week two or three. So that's good news there. Maybe see Terrion out there. But as reinforcements come and we know they're on the way, I'm not really worried about the defense. I think that was kind of like a one-off performance, but I am kind of concerned about the game plan this week against the Packers, because Jordan Love is great at two things. He's great against the blitz, and he's great at beating man coverage. So if this is a game where you're going to try to lean into your strengths of the defense, which is kind of what they do here, their blitz rate has gone down a little bit, but it's still part of the game, and they still play a lot of man coverage. So if you're going to lean into that, Packers could carve you up. There are a couple plays in that first game where they got beat on some man beaters. So I'm curious if they try to deviate from that, maybe disguise things a little more, play a little bit more zone against the Packers. But at least defensively, overall, I'm not concerned about them for the rest of the season. But, Packers have some playmakers, so I'm curious to change things up a bit.
Yeah, man, I really wanted to hear from Kelvin Shepard this week. I think we all look forward to his weekly press conferences, but it felt like he really would have brought the fire and brimstone this week. And, it might be different circumstances under which he speaks to us next week. We'll see. But he would have been highly entertaining after that performance. It was, by far their worst of the season. Yards per play, passing yards per attempt, in addition to all of the EPA stats that I'm sure Colton could run through for us. But I agree. Like, the explosive plays, for the most part, and I know Dan has been saying this all season, were the product of a single player blowing an assignment or failing to execute a play that he typically makes. Like there was one running back screen where Jack Campbell, who's maybe the best defender against the run in the NFL, just lost track of the running back, at least to my eyes, and he leaked out for like a 30-yard gain down the field. Like that's not going to happen again. There was another play, the third and 17, where I think Anzalone lost his man in coverage. Al-Qadeen Muhammad has Jameis Winston wrapped up dead to rights and just doesn't finish the play. And then obviously the trick plays. Thomas Harper took the bait on the first one and left the deep part of the field vacant. I do want to give credit, though, to Thomas Harper. I thought he ended up playing a pretty darn good game after that. And, you know, he's played pretty darn well in place of Kirby Joseph from the moment he had to step in for him back in KC. I think he had that fourth down or third down pass breakup when Kirby was briefly sidelined during that game. And he's been pretty steady playing Kirby's role ever since. You know, obviously he has the interception on Sunday where kind of read Winston's eyes and then made a diving play in coverage. But maybe his best play of the game was one that he didn't even get credit for in the box score. But the fourth and goal pass breakup that Rock Ya-Sin made that kept that game a three-point game and probably saved the game, he attributed to Thomas Harper. And he said Thomas Harper, before the snap, alerted him to the play. And if you go back and watch it, Harper, who's playing safety in the end zone, steps into a passing lane where Winston would have targeted Darius Slayton, like on a little slant to the goal line. And that allowed Ya-Sin, who was covering Slayton, to drop back into the end zone and help out BB, who had lost a step on Theo Johnson. And it's Ya-Sin who ends up making the breakup and saving that play. But he really attributed it to Thomas Harper, just knowing the defense, running the defense, and getting the secondary aligned. So shout out there. But I mean, all things considered, that was an ugly effort for the defense, and they're going to want to be better on Thursday. I think Davenport returning is big because, you know, you can probably bounce Aleem McNeil back into more of a traditional role as a defensive tackle. I know they've used him a little bit, a lot of it last week at defensive end, but I think what Davenport gives you is what Aleem and Al-Qaeddine Muhammad give you in combination on the edge. Like, Muhammad's your pass rusher. Aleem might be your edge setter against the run. Davenport can do both of those things at once. And so I think that helps them deploy Aleem in a role that's better suited to his strengths. And hopefully Davenport can give him a little bit of a pocket pushing, pocket crushing presence against the pass.
Yeah, I think, and obviously the defense, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you guys said here. One-off performance, so they're getting reinforcements back. And, you know, I think going forward, we can talk more. I mean, we have, you know, 12 minutes left. We can talk some keys to victory before we get into our official picks for, of course, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. But they go into tomorrow without Graham. And I know Graham's been banged up. He's been dealing with injuries. Hasn't obviously had the greatest year, but they're going to have Tristan in there. They're already missing Christian Mahogany. So you're going to have Yody. Unless, I know people are asking about Miles Frazier to just go and thrown right in the starting lineup and just be, you know, one of the best guards in the NFL upon starting, but the reality is he's not. Yody and Tristan will be out there. But what are some keys to victory for tomorrow? What are some expectations from you guys? At least it's at home. It's at Ford Field. But to come out with a victory here, not get swept by the Packers.
I'd love to think the deep ball is just going to show up, but I think that's unrealistic. You know, the Packers, the way they play, it's this rush four, drop seven, zone heavy, make you win in a slow, methodical way down the field. And it's not sexy. It's kind of boring, but the Lions kind of have the weapons in St. Brown and Jameson, who's a little bit more involved in some of this short and intermediate passing game the last few weeks. And obviously, you know, Gibbs out of the backfield to make unsexy short throws sexy really fast, right? Like, they can break a tackle, and that's what it's going to boil down to, is being patient and turning something from not nothing, but something big from something little. And it's something they just didn't do enough in week one. You know, Goff completes 31 passes in that game and he finishes with 225 yards. The run game, Gibbs, what did they, 44 yards? I think something terrible on the ground. Like, you can't have that. You have to stay ahead of the sticks. You have to be efficient. And if you're not going to get the big plays, if you're not going to get the bombs, then, you know, you have to at least keep moving the sticks. And of course, as with all matchups, don't turn the ball over. You just can't afford it in a matchup like this. Take care of the football.
Go ahead, Bertie.
Yeah, I think I'm really intrigued to watch the interior of the offensive line tomorrow against, you know, Devontae Wyatt and Colby Wooden, who have both had really strong seasons, beginning with their performance against this offensive line back in week one. And I go back to something Tate told me recently where I was just asking him where he felt like he's grown the most this season. And he was like, you know, just my understanding of the playbook. He was like, I'll be honest. I thought I knew it a little bit better than I did entering that week one game. And it that was a lesson to me that I still hadn't maybe fully mastered it. I'm paraphrasing there, but that was the gist of what he relayed to me. And so, you know, I want to see how he performs tomorrow at home, where they'll have the comfortable settings in their favor and with a better understanding of the playbook against Wyatt, who had two sacks last week, and how that, you know, he can combine with Coyote and Graham to hopefully give this team more of a push up front.
Yeah, for me, I'll go a little less like technical X's and O's. I just think they can't afford to get in a game where they're playing from behind like the entire game, like they kind of were in that last one, having to play catch up against a defense like this where you are kind of forced to dink and dunk your way back in the game and sort of like death by a million paper cuts. That's kind of like,
yeah,
ideally what you're doing in a game like this. But if they can get up to a lead, like they get the ball first and score and make the Packers play catch up, I think that's the kind of game you want to get into in terms of game flow. Because we've seen so many games this year derailed by game flow where, third and longs, we can't convert. Like sort of the game plan is thrown out the window and all of a sudden they're asking Jared to throw it 40 plus times. And that's really not like a winning recipe for them. So even if it's ugly and you got to grind it out, like run the ball, like Philly, I mean, in that game against the Lions, that was not pretty from them offensively, but I mean, they ran it 40 plus times and did what they had to do on the ground. Like, I think that can help things out. You wait for the pass plays to come. You don't force it, take what's given to you and capitalize when you get in the red zone. I think that's really important too. So if you can, you know, even if it's like a 17-14 game, one of those games where you just grind it out, as kind of Dan said earlier this week, like that just might be the style that they have to play with until they get more of their guys back here. Obviously, the interior is a little banged up right now. No Graham, that really hurts. So I am curious what it's going to look like, but that just might be the style for a game like this. And if they can just, you know, stay ahead of the sticks and do the little things right in a game like this and, you know, avoid the major pressure that the Packers want to get you into by, you know, rushing with four and then dropping the coverage. If you can avoid getting into those situations, those scenarios, I think you got a chance to make it a close game in the fourth quarter and find a way to win.
I want to see Amik Robertson on Christian Watson all day long. Let him rebound, put him on the big man, put the biggest man on the field on the Packers' biggest man on the field.
Love to see it.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Mike,
by the way, Tate, you guys may have noticed Tate, he was freshly shorn last Sunday. He cut the mullet. He had a mullet since pre-COVID. So this was the first time in like 5 years that he cut his hair. He said when he walked into his house after getting his hair cut, opens the front door and his fiance just like stared at him for 20 seconds, like trying to figure out either who he was or who he had become. Like, what is this? But Tate said he was thinking about cutting the mullet like a month or so ago. And it was randomly Pat O'Connor who was like, "Nah, dude, you're playing well. Keep the mullet, keep the mullet." And so Tate said after his performance against Philly, he was like, "Yeah, I got to cut it. I got to cut it now." And when I asked him if he felt like he had played better against the Giants, he was like, "Fuck, I hope so." But he did. He bounced back in a big way. And I think we'll see a better version of him tomorrow. The other thing, worth noting about tomorrow's game, the Lions offense has not scored points off of a takeaway in, I believe, six games now. And part of that is due to a lack of takeaways. They had gone two games without one, and I think they had won in a three-game stretch. But it's also because of some missed opportunities, including last week. Harper gets the interception, sets the offense up on the plus 45. They go three and out and punt. So, you know, if and when they get a ball, the defense gets their hands on a ball tomorrow and sets up the offense, especially in a game where every possession is going to be crucial, you feel like they got to turn those into points.
Yeah, before we get to our picks, Mike asked about Brian Branch. He said, did anyone else notice that Brian Branch was not hustling like his usual self on a lot of plays, a lot of out of character? I know they asked Dan, you guys asked Dan about it, and he kind of had defended Brian Branch there, but is that a common theme here, Nick, kind of with Brian Branch? I know he's dealing with some injury. Like, he's dealing with what? Is it the toe? The toe injury, I think he's dealing with, or he's dealing with a injury. But it seems like Brian, even though he has an impact on the game just by being on the field, I've seen that more and more often where people are asking me about Brian Branch, like he hasn't been like he would, because he doesn't have four interceptions on the year, I guess would be the only, the question people ask. Last year he had a bunch of takeaways, this year he doesn't have a bunch of takeaways, but is that something you guys notice with Brian Branch? Like a little dip in not only production, but in other areas, or no, maybe people are just overreacting.
I would be very, very hesitant to question that guy's effort. You know, maybe he is a step slow dealing with toe and ankle injuries that can really, really impact, you know, some of the explosion elements of the game for him. But I wouldn't say he's playing poorly. You know, he's been more productive as a pass rusher this year. He's still, you know, got a healthy amount of TFLs. It's just the, you know, some of the coverage stuff, the range stuff hasn't been as dynamic this year. But again, I don't know how much of that has to do with injuries. I don't know how much he maybe is even in his own head a little bit with some of the flags he's been drawing. You know, I don't know what kind of hesitation that creates. Certainly not enough at times because he's still drawing them. But I still think very highly of Brian Branch. I think you're a worse team when he's not on the field, even when he's not at 100%.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that dude. He's a dog.
Yeah. I think I brought up Brian to Dan Campbell last week because when I talked with Brian in the locker room and just asked him to assess his performance this year, Brian, being his own harshest critic, was like, I'd give myself a C+. And his biggest misgiving was just that he hadn't come down with an interception yet. And to be fair, that's a drought that goes back to, I think, week six of last season. He had four in the first five or six games. He's now gone 20 games without one. And I asked him, like, is that kind of gnawing at you? And he was like, yeah, it is. But shit, they only throw at me like one or two times a game. And it's not quite that few. It's more like three times a game. But it was closer to five last season. So he hasn't had quite as many opportunities in coverage. But, you know, I'll echo J-Rod. He's been even more productive rushing the passer. And, yes, injuries can sometimes make it look like a player's effort is lacking when really the physical component has been compromised.
Now it's time for our dog and pony show brewing picks of the week. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving game, Lions Packers. I think it's basically a pick 'em game. We don't have to do spread. We don't have to do the spread. Just give me your final score predictions, or at least who do you think wins the game? You don't have to give me a final score prediction, but I know J-Rod, you don't like, just give me who wins the game, J-Rod. We'll just go there. Who wins the game tomorrow? How does it look? What do you guys
think? I think it's going to be a grinded out low scoring affair. I'm going to give you a score, and I'm going to give you 2017. I think it's going to be a tight, competitive game. I think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, and we'll give America something to enjoy while they process their Thanksgiving dinners.
So you're predicting like the opposite of the Joe Burrow Lions experience.
Yeah, no 400 yards for Calvin Johnson and a loss.
I got 17. Oof. Let's go 17-16 Lions. Ooh. Ooh. This is everything in my head tells me to pick against them. Like the Packers just kind of match up really well against the Lions. But I've seen Dan Campbell win too many of these games when their backs are against the wall and people look at the injury list and start to doubt them. So I don't know why I'm doing this, but I feel like they find a way to get it done. But it is going to be a grinded out
game. Yeah. Colton, I'm with you, dude. I when I was on with Carson Anderson this morning, they asked me to make my pick, and I was like, I just think the Lions win for one reason more than any other. I can't imagine Dan Campbell getting swept by Matt LaFleur. I just can't. I don't think he will allow that to happen. I don't necessarily know how or what it looks like, but I think that's a coach who's going to have every edge he needs tomorrow to get his team across the finish line against Green Bay. I'll say 23-20 Lions. And I'll say this, I think Brian Branch ends his pick drought against the team against whom he thought he had a pick six back in week one. They got called back on a holding call in the secondary. I think Brian gets his pick, and I think it's a difference in this game.
There you go. I'll go 24-20 Lions.
We're homers.
Aside from the matchup issues, I think the biggest point is what you echoed, which I just can't see Matt LaFleur sweeping Dan Campbell. I won't do it. I refuse to do it. I'd rather be wrong than say it. So I'm going that route. We appreciate you all as always. Hit the like button, all 400 plus that was in here. Hit the subscribe button. We'll be back next week to recap not only this game, but we'll preview next Thursday's game against the Cowboys. But until then, we will catch you all.